From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast. I am your host, Hunter, and over joining us across the ocean in Australia is Mr. Stuart Balk. Say hello, Stu.
You are nothing but white shit!
Thank you, Stuart. Things going good over there, down under, I can tell. And then in the snowy mountains of the highest state in the Union, Colorado, we have Mr. John Grace.
Howdy, everybody.
Actually, it's not snowy now, I imagine. I imagine it's very pretty and green.
The mountains actually have snow on them. We got some storm off the Pacific Ocean.
Oh, okay.
I had snow yesterday that's now rain, but hey, good for the yard.
Okay, so my description remains accurate.
Hey, surprisingly accurate, hey, not sarcastic.
What, Stuart?
Hey, Hannah.
Yeah.
Colorado putting the high in Rocky Mountain High, right?
Oh, yes.
Ah, yeah. The marijuana is the state flower. No.
First John Denver reference of 2015.
Yes. Believe me. We never get enough of it. Every store that shut down is now a weed store. There's tons of them.
There's head shops everywhere.
Dude, they all have weird names, like the Clone Store.
Hmm?
Yes.
The Clone Store?
Yep. And they always have medical symbols, so they've come up with every way to combine the color green and the Red Cross medical symbol. It's weird.
It would have, like, the Blue Cross symbol and a marijuana leaf, like snakes going around it.
giving a lot of undereducated slackers some employment, I'm sure.
Oh, I'm sure.
And fucking tourism to Amsterdam plummeted. The legislation came through as well.
Oh yeah, the hell wants to go there now.
As soon as drugs become more widespread legally, Amsterdam is gonna. People are gonna have less of a reason to go there.
Amsterdam.
It's true. Yeah. All right. So this week, this was a show I wanted to do because I was flipping through Netflix and documentary caught my eye called Evocateur, the Morton Downey Jr. story. And I decided to give it a spin. And I'd heard the name Morton Downey Jr., but I didn't know what his show was about. And I was watching it, and I immediately went, I'll bet John knows about this. I'll bet John watched this. And I'm watching it, and I'm seeing these people like Alan Dershowitz, Ron Paul,
Gloria Allred.
Gloria Allred, holy shit. Roy Ennis, Al Sharpton, all these people coming through the show that's led by this cigarette-smoking madman who, like, yells and screams, has a mob of crazed teenagers and, you know, social misfits. It is in his audience, and I was just like, oh my gosh. And so I was like, oh, I want to show that. I want to get John's take on it. And I also wanted to see what Stuart thought of it, getting it through the, you know, the Rube Goldberg crazy straw of the Australian lens, you know? So, so had you ever heard of Morton Downey, Stuart?
Yes.
You had heard of him.
I saw an episode of his, which I think I still have on VHS. On one of my Kiss compilations, of course. back in about probably 93, I want to say, which was one of the... This episode, I think, was from 89, so I'm guessing it was one of the last ones done. And it was, if I'm not mistaken, a two-parter, but I could be wrong. And I had Ace Frehley and Joey Ramone on there, and A couple of girls from Cycle Sluts from Hell was on there. It was all about rock and all sorts of stuff.
That's like the most New York. All you need is Johnny Thunders in there. and Ross the Boss.
He was Johnny Thunders was unavailable due to death that day. Oh, no, he was actually still alive. No, sorry. that time, 89, he was still alive. It was like, wow, okay. This is like an insight to Riot, basically, this show. It's like, the impression I got with the show was watching this documentary was that all Mort would have to do was just wave his hand and say, Riot, now it has torn that place apart. It was that close to it.
Well, what was it? One of the guys described one of the Al Sharpton shows as a riot.
Yeah, it was. It made newspaper headlines at the time.
Yeah. And I first heard about him, like I said, probably about 95, sorry, a bit later, when all the tape trading started to really sort of surface amongst the Kiss collectors from the conventions and whatnot, and that was one of the episodes on there, and, it was all right, I'll let you know what I think about Downey himself, who is no relation to Robert Downey Jr., let's say that much now,
right
out there.
Yeah, his dad, Morton Downey, was a famous crooner.
Mm-hmm. And Mort tried to be one.
The first reporting star, according to the documentary.
Yeah, they made it sound like he was one of the first recording stars, which is funny. I didn't know that.
But he was pre Al Jolson, was he?
Well, Al Jolson was the first in movies, I think.
Oh, okay. Right,
but,
right.
You know, I don't know if. If they're referring to records or what, but Morton Downey Jr. tried to have a singing career. Like he, you know, did a few things here and there, and then he got into politics, and
he didn't have a look for as a singer. You know, he didn't have that Dean Martin classically, you know, good looks and. You know, well, our friend Sammy Davis Jr. didn't exactly have them either. He had charisma, which Morton Downey Jr. just didn't have on stage anyway as a singer.
As a singer. As a host, he kind of had the sort of piss and vinegar to do that show. But so, John, you actually watched the show fairly regularly.
Yeah, when I was in high school.
Yeah.
This was aired on the local Fox station. At that time, Fox had... The Fox network had actually taken over a lot of the UHF channels in America. And Morton Downey had become a staple. I think it aired at 10 p.m. because they didn't have a local news broadcast on the Fox channel. So they had Morton was always there at 10 p.m. and either at 10 p.m. or 10:30. And I watched it every night. I'd stay up late, you know, on school nights watching it because I was pretty hooked on it for a few months. And before that, I had first heard of it because Chris Elliott was doing a spoof of it on Letterman because it was a big thing in the New York, New Jersey area before it went to national syndication. And Elliott was already making fun of it on Letterman. So he would come out wearing the wig and the moles on his face would get worse every time he would come out. And I had never seen the Morton Downey Jr. I thought he was making fun of Wally George, who's referenced in the documentary, because I'd seen clips of Wally George, but when the Morton Downey Jr. show started going into syndication, then I saw what it was, and I was like, oh, okay. And I liked it enough where I even got his book. He put out there was a quickly published book to cash in on the show's, like, almost, like, overnight success called Mort, Nowhere to Hide. And I remember reading that, like, an hour or less. It wasn't the most intellectually written book ever. And it was probably ghostwritten, which is the irony. But I watched it every night. I thought it was hilarious because I recognized the pro wrestling theatrics of it, like, right away. Like, the fake security guards carrying an angry guest off the stage. It was all faked. And, you know, it was like, it was addictive. And then it just seemed like it was off the air within a year. Like, and it had to have good ratings, but, it was gone, like, in no time.
Well, and it had that insane logic. Like, somebody would make an argument, and Morton, in the clips in the show, he would try to, he would just try to start shit with, like, making the most ludicrous reach. Ron Paul would talk about how marijuana needs to be legalized, and he's like, it's not hurting. He's like, well, if I beat the shit out of my kid, is that a hurting? You know, like, he just makes some false equivalency.
That ad hoc, fallacious argument against libertarianism. It's like, oh, wait, so I can go up, slap somebody in the face, not be arrested? It's all this stupid. It's like, no, you didn't listen to what I just explained to you, what this is. So his whole shows were paced like that. It would, like, he would take an argumentative position no matter who was the guest. And but it was always like the flag waving American. And it's hard to explain and look at this now, like with the way that MSNBC or Fox News or all the cable news channels are nowadays, where this doesn't even seem like a big deal. But this was shocking stuff back in the late 80s, seeing this on television.
Well, even some of it kind of did seem shocking when I watched it. Like, there's a woman standing up talking, and he, like, bumps her down with his chest. Yeah. I was like, holy shit. Like, if someone did that on TV today, they'd be crucified.
Oh, they'd be gone.
That stuff, that stuff is not tame by today's standards. It's still shocking.
Well, yeah,
I'm with Hunter on that, yeah.
His yelling at Gloria Allred and then the insults he was using on her, you couldn't get away with today because they've actually made a lot of television real PC compared to that. Of course, I'm hearkening back to the days when Howard Stern had a show on television, so it wasn't really that unusual.
Stern actually had the same the same channel, by the way, WWOR 9.
Yeah, sure did.
Yeah.
And probably the same studio, for all I know. And Downey was a regular on his show. Yeah, and the other thing was, like, this was before, like, talk radio was big with when everybody talks about talk, right, crazy, angry talk radio or whatever. That
Rush Limbaugh and stuff.
Right, which is funny. If you ever listen to Limbaugh, he's never angry at all.
No, in fact,
actually very calm his entire broadcast.
Yeah, no, I mean, in fact, whenever Rush does get mad, people jump on it and go, see how crazy he is?
Yeah, and it's usually he does it for emphasis.
Yeah.
Make a point. It's not that he's angry, mad. You know, they always have that one photo of him with his mouth open and all pissed looking, and that's not how a show is at all when you listen to it.
No, in fact, this documentary did something that I was like, okay, well, that's not true. It acted like Mort was the precursor for the Glenn Becks, the Rushes, the Sean Hannitys. And I was like, no, that's not at all, because I think people who don't watch those shows and don't listen to them and just read about them on Media Matters, that's what they think they are. They think it's just angry people screaming and talking about how we need to get the black guy out of the White House and stuff. When really, I mean, Glenn Beck he's meek almost. It's kind of, I can't watch him because he's so like, he's such a gentle little Mormon child, you know?
Yeah.
So why is Glenn Beck so despised then throughout the U.S.? I mean, when I was there 4 years ago, all I heard was like how stupid Glenn Beck is and how much everybody hates him. And like,
because he was popular. He was a popular figure on Fox News. And
he was a success. That's what they hate.
Yeah, like, I mean, occasionally Glenn Beck would you know, cry, or he would get in play, but he wasn't like Morton Downey Jr. Like, he's just, I don't even know what Glenn Beck's politics are, to be honest.
like weird libertarian populist. It's kind of strange.
Like, he'll talk about the Founding Fathers, but then he'll talk about something, and it's like, I don't know what your thing is, but I don't know. It's just Mort felt more like what I was seeing on Jerry Springer.
Yeah.
Jerry Springer would run and hide under, like, he would hit people with his microphone and run, whereas Morton Downey would, like, get up in their face.
No. Springer never, I mean, I used to watch a lot of Springer. I mean, I'm not going to hide about that, but he never, ever got in the face of people. Was Springer around the time of Morton Downey's show, or was it after?
He was after, I think.
Right, he was after. He was a ripoff of that show.
Well, I didn't say Springer got in people's faces. I was just saying Springer would he didn't get up in people's faces the way Mort did.
I'm going to say that Springer actually took a page out of Mort's book and said, what he's doing, I'm going to do the complete opposite. I want the same sort of fever pitch among the audience that Mort has, but I'm not going to be the way Mort is.
Right. No, Springer's more of a Springer's more of a, he has that demeanor of a meek Jewish boy, you know?
Well, you look at the end of the Springer shows, there was always him sitting down with a message for, what, two and a half minutes. Morton Downey Jr. never did that. It was just like...
No, he did. In his shows, he did do that.
Did he?
Mort had the message at the end where he made the last statement, and he was calm and dragging on his cigarette, and he wasn't yelling.
if you
actually watch the old show, that's what he did. Like, Springer ripped off the whole format.
Oh, okay.
Right. Yeah.
Like I said, it's been a long ass time since I've seen that one episode I've ever seen of Morton Downey Jr.'s. Because, like I said, I mean, I'll say it now. I don't particularly like the guy a great deal. I think he's full of piss and shit. Really, I mean.
Well, and it's kind of funny when I look at Morton Downey Jr. Like, I could see, like, if I was a teenager and that show was out, and my parents didn't have the good taste to tell me to turn it off, and or they would beat me, like, because they wouldn't let me watch trash television. But I definitely would have watched that show as a teenager. But when I look at it today, I kind of had a moment like I had with the G. Gordon Liddy, Timothy Leary documentary, where I was kind of like, you know, Morton Downey Jr. is this guy who's supposedly on the right and stuff and was kind of sort of Republican, but I really didn't really agree with a lot of his stuff, you know, when I was looking at it today.
I was going to ask you guys, how sincere did he come across as a true Republican? Because he was an extremist.
Not really. I think he was a guy like... I think his sincerity can be summed up in the whole I faked my attack on me by skinheads type thing.
I remember that. I actually remember that story, and it only came to me as I was watching the documentary. I go, that's right, he pulled that stunt about getting attacked by skinheads back in the early 90s. And
he's got the lipstick on his face that looks like he tried to draw a swastika in a mirror.
Yeah, that's like the worst looking swastika I've ever seen in my life.
What kind of...
If a guy with a high profile such as Morton Downey Jr. is going to pull stuff like that with his friend, that Bachman, whatever his name was, if seriously, do it right. Mm-hmm. Don't just draw a whole bunch of lines and think, oh, look, this, you know, the swastika on the skinheads are going to attack me. It was ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
It looks stupid, really. I mean, I don't know, sort of possessed someone to do that sort of stunt. I mean, show was over by that time. What was the point?
I think it was just the act of a desperate man, you know.
I think he was trying to work for press. He needed the attention to try to bring attention back to his show or something. I don't know. It's like he was already gone. Yeah, he was not airing in my area when all that stuff went down.
Anyway, let's swing it back, honey. You were saying about the documentary that we were actually talking about.
Well, I was just saying that I just kind of had that kind of a moment where I remember watching the Timothy Leary, G. Gordon Liddy documentary and being kind of shocked that I agreed with almost everything Timothy Leary was saying, you know? Whereas I'd always thought of Timothy Leary as this sort of, you know, acid burnout hippie, you know? And, you know, just a guy who had nothing to offer except drugs. But when I was like, G. Gordon Liddy sounds like he sounds like the Democrats I know today. You know?
Yeah.
They're like, submit to the government, you know?
Right.
And I was just kind of, when I was watching this, I was like, you know, Morton Downey Jr. is supposedly this this angry conservative type, but I didn't really find myself agreeing with too much of what he said. You know, so I was like, oh, is this conservative commentator? I haven't heard of him. Like, I'm going to watch this show, this documentary, and see what it's all about. And I thought it was an interesting show. And I thought it was kind of like a crazy story, but I was like, he's not really a guy I agree with too much on. Like, it's always ironic when the guy brags about his horrible eating and smoking habits and then dies of lung cancer.
Yeah. He was the definition of that.
Yeah, without a doubt. John, I want to ask you, you may have brought it up, and if you have, I apologize. How widespread was Morton Downey Jr.'s show throughout the U.S.?
I believe he was on in at least one TV market in every state. Like, it was big. It was a big wave of success for about, seriously, 6 months. And it seems like it just fell out of favor, like, just as quick.
Two years, right?
Yeah, and it's like I kind of compared it on Twitter to the way Duck Dynasty blew up.
real big for a little while. Mm-hmm. And then I said, but I swear he fell out of popularity almost three times as fast. I don't know if a show that's booked like that with that type of energy at that time slot, and this is on at 10 p.m., 10:30 at night, the Johnny Carson time slot in most markets. I don't know how that show, if something of that pace really can maintain an audience for a long time. You know, because I think you get burned out watching it, because it's kind of, you expect the bullying points and everything, like when he's going to blow up at somebody or wave a point to their face. And also the hypocrisy starts to show after a while.
Yeah. But that's the thing, like, I you couldn't have put that show on any earlier, really, because of its content.
No.
That was not a 7 p.m. show. No way. No. No hope. And by that time, people don't want to get wound up watching a show with that sort of, sort of excitement, if you will. You know, it depends how you look at it.
Right.
At 10:30 at night, people are winding down. They're not getting wound up.
Right.
So really sort of counteracted what the underdogs are aiming for.
Yeah, and it was exciting television at the time. It was so, like, they compare it to how Donahue was very quaint and quiet compared to this show, and that's an apt point.
So, because, like, it seems like shows coming and going, yeah, but the shows that come and go these days don't really blow up. Maybe they do in the media, but nobody watches them.
Right.
Although media hype seems to be enough to keep some things going.
It does.
Like Jon Stewart. But
who watches it, you know?
No, just like,
who has cable? Squares? Come on.
Man, I still don't understand the math with $6 million a year, but anyway.
Me neither.
let me ask you guys something. With the show being pre internet, just could a show like this have survived longer during the intense media scrutiny we have now with the internet, or would it have fizzled out quicker?
I think, well...
I'm not talking about with another host. I'm talking about with Mort himself.
Oh, well, with Mort, well, yeah, of course. I was... because my thing is, the internet really inflamed scrutiny on everything. Yeah. Like, everybody, because everybody has a voice, so everybody can get pissed off about stuff they see.
Yeah.
And I kind of feel like there would have been more pressure to kill that show with the internet.
He would have to have a network really stand behind him.
Like, because if you were offended by a show, you kind of had to do a little more legwork back in the day to let your displeasure be known. But now you can just fire off a tweet, fire off a Facebook post, and, you know, and a blog like Gawker or Jezebel writes an inflammatory post, and you've got some problems, you know.
Right.
Or you could be a bunch of soft cocks like ESPN and stand Britt McHenry down for one stupid week. Just pathetic. I'll let them know about that as well on Twitter. Tell them how soft they were.
Well, they have that rep now. They like suspend reporters constantly for speaking their mind.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why they suspended Bill Simmons for like a month.
Yeah, what did he do?
Just said something honestly about the NFL president that he felt like the guy knew about the spousal abuse video or whatever the hell it was. It was just like a weird comment, and he suspended for like a month. And he was just making an honest comment.
Ridiculous.
I mean, it's strange. It's a really weird business. The media today is, it's funny, looking at this documentary kind of reminds me how much stuff has changed. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't say anything now.
No, like, it's because it's just there's so many people whose stock and trade is outrage, frankly. And, you know, this was a show about outrage and where people express that. But really, that stuff is so alive in the blogosphere. It's all about just whipping people up into a frenzy and getting a mob together. And
also, you have to keep in mind, he was a two-fisted host. He was the get right in their face like he was going to fight. You know, there were some fights. He was like, it was all about confrontation. Nowadays, it's not about confrontation. It's about avoiding confrontation as much as possible.
It's passive aggressive. You know,
right. And it's like, nobody, nothing gets done because everybody's being a passive aggressive pussy about everything. At least when I watched his show, at least I felt like there was a settled opinion at the end of the show. which he would do the sit down with Mort thing in the last segment, which may not have been consistent. I just remember him doing the sit down at the end of the show if it was a heated topic like abortion, and he would give his viewpoint or whatever. And
didn't he run as a Democrat on a pro-life stance in 1980?
He may have, but Democrats could do that back then.
Yeah, back then I was like, it's so funny, like the old school pro-life Democrat, like
they don't exist anymore.
Martin Sheen is like the only one I can think of now.
Martin Sheen and Emilio Estevez are the only ones.
Because they're the Catholic Democrats, you know.
Right. It's like it's a strange thing, but yeah, back then it's more believable. I mean, there were conservative blue dog Democrats back then.
Yeah,
it's like Jimmy Carter was an anomaly at the time. Now he'd be a standard Democrat.
Yeah, no, yeah.
Did any of you guys ever see the Wally George show?
I saw clips. I never saw the whole show.
I saw the. Is that the one with the hot seat or whatever?
Yeah,
yeah.
I saw the clip with Jim and Linda Goad, where they're okay. Like they're sitting there like with the, like making out like fuck you Wally. He's like,
yeah.
You kids are sick.
Yeah, his whole thing was a shtick. Like I saw a clip. He wasn't syndicated in our area. I don't know how wide syndicated he was. But he had like a rock DJ on there. He goes, "Is it true your station plays a song called Running with the Devil?" And then the audience go, Wally. So Mort took a lot from that show.
I saw that.
I mean, the DJ was just cracking up. He couldn't even take it seriously. It was so ridiculous.
I remember seeing the episode where they had the mentors on with El Duce, and it was hysterical. It really was. And they're sitting there with their hoods on, and then all of a sudden Wally George walks up behind El Duce and rips his foot off, and it's like, this show's ridiculous. I'll give you a little fun fact, though. Do you know who Wally George's daughter is?
Rebecca De Mornay.
There you go.
Yeah.
Oh, my God,
Rebecca
really?
Rebecca De Mornay. Yeah. You look at her surname, it's not De Mornay. It's Rebecca George or whatever her name is. But
yep. Yeah.
She's actually Wally George's daughter.
I meant Debbie Goad. I don't know why I said Linda. Sorry, Jim and Debbie Goad.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry. Total aside.
Wally George seemed like a bit of a front runner to Morton Downey Jr.
Well, didn't they show a clip of Morton on Wally George's show in the
documentary?
Yeah,
because he was a host in Sacramento at the time, and then he was fired, and then he was replaced by Rush Limbaugh in the Sacramento station. And that was the start of Rush Limbaugh's rise.
I remember
Morton Downey Jr. being fired in Sacramento.
I remember Rush's TV show being on. I do remember seeing that because my dad would watch it occasionally.
I watched it in college. I watched all that stuff in college. High school and college. Who was the peak of watching that type of television? I didn't want to watch Arsenio Hall. What? He's going to have the CNC Music Factory on lip syncing?
Yeah. I got to ask Garrow if he actually watched Morton Downey Jr. I'm betting that he probably did.
I wonder if Bren watched Morton Downey Jr.
Probably did.
Oh, no. I imagine them two watching it together. It'd be hysterical.
But let's talk for a minute about the magnificence, the greatest treasure of this documentary to me, and the greatest treasure that Morton Downey's show gave the world was the ability to watch Roy Ennis knock fat Al Sharpton flat on his ass on stage.
I was unfamiliar with Roy Ennis. I didn't know who he was at all.
He's a little bit more of a kind of right leaning black dude.
You don't say.
But I think he's kind of. I looked him up when I saw the documentary, and he's kind of libertarian. I'm just looking it up, but he's kind of, I think, not as well known today.
There wasn't staged, that fight?
No.
No?
This is so great.
Al Sharpton was really hated back then. I don't know how the hell he ends up getting a show on MSNBC. Because, I mean, he was like the most hated man in New York when it was revealed the Tawana Brawley thing was a hoax.
And what's so funny is that guy, he doesn't pay taxes. He has attached himself to just all kinds of horrible causes, like Tawana Brawley and like whipping up crimes against Jews and stuff. Like, he's done all that kind of stuff, but he never has to answer for it, ever.
No.
And, like, I have friends, like, I have liberal white friends who look at me like I am the devil when I say that Al Sharpton's a piece of shit. You know?
He is!
I'm like, that guy is a fucking liar, he's a race-baiting, like, you know, just opportunistic... The guy just makes money just for nothing, and like they're like, how can you say that? He is a civil rights leader.
He's not. Oh man, listen to Ralph Bashy talk about getting into a brawl with him at the, I think it was the Coonskin premiere in New York,
which is
because he goes, "You're a bourgeois Uncle Tom," and got into like a brawl with him.
Oh my god.
Yeah, he got into like a fight with him. It's like, where did this rehab of Al Sharpton's image come about? I remember I actually listened to Air America 10 years ago. For those who don't remember, it was the liberal Democrat radio.
Yeah, it was it was the answer to right-wing talk radio.
They were dismissing Al Sharpton, claiming he was financed by Republicans to make Democrats look bad. So I don't know where the hell this rehabbed image came from. The guy's never done anything. I mean, you can watch his NBC show and laugh at it. Because of his mangling of the English language.
He can't fucking speak English. When no, he watches, you know.
It's all Republicans are to be blamed. It's like, oh, God, I'll call up some of my old, you know, karate classmates in Mississippi if I want to hear this type of stuff. Blaming everything, all their problems on Republicans. Jesus. I mean, they literally think all their problems are due to Republicans. Like, okay.
The Republicans in my sandwich?
Yeah, it's literally Republicans in my sandwich. And my sardines. Jesus. That's like, man, it's all because of the Republicans controlling everything. Complain about anything, and it's like George Bush is still president.
Oh, but it's so funny, you have those friends who are like, you know, when you kind of go, well, what's Obama done, really? Like, and they're like, well, it's because the Republicans, you know, blocked everything.
Yeah,
I'm like, look, like, the Republicans have the same amount of power now that the Democrats had when Bush was in office. And Bush did whatever the fuck he wanted. Like, yeah. what is it really? Like, even Jon Stewart pointed that out. Like, yeah.
True. but you know that the documentary, probably my only complaint is I didn't care much for the animated segments. That's become a big trend in documentaries.
Yeah mm-hmm. And the ones in this documentary are really weird, like when Morton is this monster and like his teeth are cigarettes. They're really strange.
It's a little overdone. It's not how it, probably because I grew up just watching documentaries that were nothing, never used animation, so it's a weird thing to me. But I've seen it
the
in a lot of docs
brothers.
Lately
Maisel's brothers never used animation.
I just, you know, I just don't care for it. But
hey. At least you didn't get the title sequence saying animation by Rob Zombie on there.
Oh yeah,
feared that.
Well, then you'd also have a report of the Manson massacre. You know, over the cartoons, no matter what, completely out of context.
There would have been an animated episode with Mort and Charles Manson.
Yelling at him, getting in his face. But that was the interesting thing about his show is he would have like your Ku Klux Klan types and your neo-Nazi types on there, and he would like threaten to kick their ass and call them un-American and stuff. Like that, like I said, we're missing that real sense of confrontation, like in the media today. With this,
I know, like I always hear about like right wing hate, the hate machine and stuff, and I don't know. I watch Sean Hannity, and it's just Sean being real concerned about something.
Yeah, like, and Sean saying he can't believe Miley Cyrus is now doing this terrible music when her movies used to be so good.
Yeah, and but it'll be like Sean Hannity and Gavin McInnes are concerned about your daughters at spring break, you know, stuff like that. You know, like it's them going like, you know, But I'm just like, really? This is the hate? This is the hour of hate that I'm told from 1984 that we have?
The thing is, Mort, it's if you actually watch a show, Mort's never actually hateful. It's more like the worst thing he'll say is, you don't like this country, get out.
You pablum puking freak!
Yeah, pablum puking liberal scum! But
what bugged me was I didn't mind the confrontation. I mean, I enjoyed that. The thing was that Mort became bullish about it.
Yeah.
And people were trying to get their point across, okay, which is the point of a show. You know? Right. But Mort was like, it just, because he was winding the audience up again, you know, because they were, you know, they're all fist pumping rednecks up in the crowd, you know, it's like USA, which is fine, but you know,
well, they weren't even rednecks; they were like Jersey trash.
I love the recovering Mort fans, those teenagers.
Teenagers. And I remember seeing them when I watched it, and I just knew they were like guys from the Bridge and Tunnel scene, just like having a laugh. Like they were just like a cult fan kids.
Like,
just...
they admitted, like they had their own videos where they're walking around going, "You Pablo Buchanan."
Yeah. So you got to remember, it was kind of liberating to watch somebody be that vicious on TV, because it's like, remember punk rock was dead, you know, it's like there was no rebellious rock. The most rebellious music you could hear was gangster rap, so it's like, so those guys going on there and be like, I drive an American car, Mort, it never breaks down, you know. Somehow that's almost like you're slam dancing in 1988 on television. You know, you just didn't see anything like that anywhere else. MTV was very sedate and pushing very, you know, poisons, every rose has a thorn and that type of stuff.
Like
so
the ballady makeup metal.
So this was kind of your thrashing punk at 10:30 at night.
Oh my
those
God.
Kids going, he's a commie, Mort! The Japs are gonna bomb us again! You know, all that stuff. But I knew those kids were just... They were kids goofing off, and it was obvious. You could tell he loved it. So, cause, I mean, the whole thing, like I said, it was pro wrestling theater. I recognize it as that from the get-go.
Yeah.
Sorry, I don't know why I find it so amusing.
Definitely a rock star.
I'll tell you who ripped him off probably the most, other than Springer, was Bill O'Reilly.
Really?
Bill O'Reilly really tries to have, especially the early days of the O'Reilly Factor, I don't know what it's like now, but I noticed he tried
O'Reilly's
to have that.
O'Reilly's also like a guy who's concerned. You know, he holds his pen up and kind of lectures.
But in his early days of his Fox success, his rise, he tried to present himself as this two-fisted Irish tough guy.
Well, he would do the thing where he would yell and get upset. Like, he's probably... You're right. Like, in the early days of Fox, he was probably the most confrontational talk show host. Like, and he would do that thing, and this drove liberals nuts, where he would be like, turn their mic off.
Turn their mic off now.
Turn their mic off, and they'd be getting all mad. They'd be like, can't speak, you know.
I noticed a lot of Mort Downey Jr. in him, and also that fat loser on MSNBC, the fat white guy,
Ed Schultz.
Ed Schultz, that's him.
Ed Schultz is a piece of shit.
Yeah, and I don't even know if Ed Schultz is conscientiously, you know, influenced by Mort Downey Jr., but there's a lot of that there.
No, Ed Schultz is definitely the left's Bill O'Reilly. Him right. And you know who else was kind of, who could be, well, I don't know, this guy was just, he was like angry smug, which it was Lawrence O'Donnell.
Oh, God.
You know, Lawrence O'Donnell would be like, I don't know, he's one of those guys who would get mad, but he would get, like, really condescending. Like, he was like your parent who had to put you in your place, but they were wrong, you know?
he was like a, kind of like a prep school headmaster twit.
Yeah,
that was his whole image.
He felt like like Ed Rooney from Ferris Bueller's Day Off or something.
Yeah, and he was a fake too, because he was on Hugh Hewitt's show, and Hugh would ask him, "Have you read this? Have you read that?" He just didn't know anything. He was dumb, and he was laughing at his own ignorance. But he was just he's a boob. You just give him information to read on camera. That's how half these idiots.
He had this interview with Condoleezza Rice.
Yeah,
and he did the thing that all like. You know, how could you do this, and blah, blah, blah. And she just was like, now, She got like school teachery with him. Like, now Lawrence, this is now stop it. Okay, you're talking nonsense. Here's what, and she just like put him in his place. But he had that sort of like, I'm gonna ask you the tough questions, you know, and I'm gonna wag my finger in your face and tell you what a bad person you are. And she just wasn't having it.
They look like the so-called tough reporters that would be on TV shows like the Rockford Files.
The crusading journalists in Hollywood movies that don't fucking exist.
Right, they don't exist in real news anywhere. This idea of the two-fisted news reporter is laughable because I can't think of that ever existing. But you'd always see them in like the A-Team or something, or Hunter. You know, Rick and Dee Dee have to protect their crusading tough reporter who's got the big scoop. It's like most reporters, and I've spent some time in journalism. That was my profession at one point. They're all chicken shits. They don't want to get in confrontation with anybody. There's no such thing.
Most of them don't even want to get up and go to the city council meetings.
Right. There was one, though.
John, let me ask you.
Oh, Stuart.
Your countryman, Stu. Steve Dunleavy.
Oh, Jesus. Don't talk to me about him.
He created that. I think he created that image. I swear.
What was his show? Was it Hard Topic or something like that?
He was on a show
back in the 90s.
When the Fox News, not Fox News, but the Fox Network started, they had an hour magazine called The Reporters to kind of compete with 60 Minutes, and Steve Dunleavy was one of the reporters. And that's where I first saw him. I was laughing. I was doing impressions of his Aussie narration of stories because he was so pulpy and melodramatic in his descriptions.
He was ridiculous. He had a show back in the 90s. Like it was just him hosting it. Like, it was like Hard Topic or something like that. It was, I think they ripped it off somewhere. What was it on? Was it Tropic Thunder? I think they ripped it off on. Natural Born Killers. And Natural Born Killers is a rip off of Steve Dunleavy.
So the Robert Downey Jr. character with the I'm
totally. He based it on Steve Dunleavy.
Okay.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
What was that character's name?
I can't remember, but he was like. His Australian accent was pretty bad, I thought. It was whatever.
I almost felt like it was intentionally terrible, though.
It was like Mickey and Mallory.
Oh, it was so Wayne Gale.
Wayne Gale, okay.
Yeah, Wayne Gale.
Yeah, he spent some time around Dunleavy. He followed him around New York at one point, basing the character on him.
Which was the worst thing, because Dunleavy had been in New York for friggin' decades. His accent had morphed into a New York one. It wasn't a true representation of an Australian accent. But, right. John, what I wanted to ask you was, with your background in journalism, do you think someone like Morton Downey Jr., if he was still alive today... See, the thing was, when the Mort died, was it 2002, 2003, something like that?
It was 2001 or 2002. It was early. It was like, I kind of vaguely remember it being reported.
Right. When did satellite radio come in?
2004, I think, was that the big year for satellite radio.
Yeah, it was around then.
Right. Do you think more could have had a career in satellite radio if he was fit and healthy and alive, obviously?
Possibly. It seems like you could get more... You know, then again, they wouldn't have Michael Savage on satellite radio. And I don't know if that's because Savage wouldn't accept their licensing fee or they didn't want him on there. So he probably could have been on there for a couple of years, maybe. I can't think of anybody that confrontational extreme being on satellite radio, though.
They fired Anthony Cumia for being confrontational on Twitter.
I was going to say about how many guys or how many hosts out there, radio hosts for that matter, terrestrial or satellite, had pinched a lot from Morton Downey Jr. Opie and Anthony was one that came to mind. Mancow was another one that I know of. I mean, I don't know a great deal of them, but they're the ones that certainly spring to mind when I think of them.
Right. I don't know. It's hard to say that he inspired any of them. I've never heard his radio stuff. Like, by the time he was fired in Sacramento and replaced by Rush Limbaugh, like in the 80s, you know, he was not syndicated nationally, to the best of my knowledge. So I don't have no idea what his radio show was like. Seems like he subbed for some host at one point, like after his show was gone.
No, what I'm saying is, I think they've taken the attitude of Morton Downey Jr. and his confrontational style from the TV show and adapted it to radio. Yeah.
Not so much radio. Maybe there's one. Opie and Anthony, no. I don't think they were inspired by him at all. Their stuff is more like free comedy, like open mic comedy, like having a comedian on there and then they'll interact. They didn't do anything really confrontational or vicious on Opie and Anthony. It was just like, it was free form comedy. And they're not political. It wasn't really a political show. There's one guy I'm trying to think of. He died. He was a New York host and, he died not long ago and he was on New York radio forever. And he was a big inspiration. He might've been an inspiration to, Martin Downey Jr. I can't think of the guy's name right now. Bob Grant. That's his name. Bob Grant. That's the guy who may have inspired everybody.
Really?
Bob Grant was like, his thing was, if he got mad at a caller, he'd be, get off my show, you know? And, I think by now he would be considered like racist or bigoted or whatever. But I guess he would describe, the black neighborhoods as Zulus. He would make jokes about AIDS. It would be all this stuff you could do in the 80s you could not do past that point. Like, he was probably the one who started the really vicious, mean idea of a right-wing talk show host. And this is just stuff I've heard secondhand. I've never actually heard his broadcast. I mean, he was subbing for Sean Hannity a few years back before his death, and he was so old and out of it, it's like he had no business being on the mic. It was like, subbing for Sean Hannity, and it's just like, why is this guy on now? He's too old. It's like G. Gordon Liddy at least retired when he started stuttering and needed a second micer to finish his sentences and stuff. It's like, you have to admit when you're too old for it. But from what I understand, Bob Grant may have been the guy who inspired everybody, and even Stern, I think, listed him as an inspiration. Yeah, and he's just one of those guys you don't hear about anymore. But even people who politically disagreed with him would listen to a show, I think, just to be shocked at the humor, you know, because the shock humor was rarer back then. And that would be my guess is who Morton Downey's real inspiration was, Bob Grant. Bob Grant, I think, had been doing it since the 60s. Like, he goes way back.
I want to ask you guys about Joe Pine.
Right.
I had never heard of Joe Pine. Were you familiar with him, any of you two?
No.
He was a guy I had heard about from a radio station manager used to do these spots on a show from out of Alabama, and he talked about Joe Pine and described him as an interesting forerunner of like all the talk show hosts today or right-wing conservative talk show hosts, but said the guy was pro-union, like he was more complex than you would think. And I looked him up and looked up his Wikipedia, and I think there were a few YouTube clips out there, and it was pretty interesting. I guess Frank Zappa had confrontations with him, supposedly. The videotape doesn't exist if it happened, but he's one of those guys I like to see more of to see what it was all about. But it was cool to see some clips in the documentary.
Libertarianism.
And clearly he had definitely inspired some, but I'd never seen the show. I'd never heard of it before that.
Own your own music, don't do drugs, and religion is bad.
Well, okay, Joe Pine was like,
don't you eat that yellow snow. Sorry.
Joe Pine was like a war vet, and I guess he had a wooden leg. And so the urban legend is Frank Zappa was on a show with his long hair, and Joe Pine said, you got long hair, so what are you, a girl? And then Frank Zappa said, well, you have a wooden leg. Are you a table? But apparently this clip, I don't think the clip exists anywhere, but that's the urban legend of Joe Pine.
That's so Frank Zappa, though.
Like, yeah, exactly.
I love Frank Zappa so much.
But yeah, Joe Pine was probably pretty close to what Martin Downey Jr.'s show was before, you know, Martin Downey Jr.'s show. The documentary definitely nailed that aspect of it.
Do you think Eric Bogosian modeled his character on talk radio, the film, after Morton Downey Jr. in any way?
No, I think he... I think his play talk radio probably predated Morton Downey's show being big, I'm guessing. Okay. I'm just going to take a guess. But there were a lot of New York hosts. Probably Bob Grant was more of an inspiration. Also, talk radio was based on a host that was killed here in Denver, Alan Berg.
Yeah, that's right. That's who it was.
And Alan Berg was a very trolling... He was a liberal, but he was a very trolling radio host on local radio. Was said to be amazing. Like, I talked to people who listened to him who were here in Denver back in the 70s and early 80s and said, yeah, he was on, you had to listen to him every night because you never knew what he was going to say.
Yeah, because I was going to say, like, I was like, the guy in talk radio is based on somebody, but I can't remember.
Well, yeah, it was Alan Berg, and they're trying to, like, where he was killed, like, his driveway. He was killed in his driveway by the skinhead, and or white supremacist, whatever he was, and they're trying to
so
name...
So he was killed by the CIA, is what you're saying.
Apparently. Alex Jones would tell you that. But they're trying to name that street after Alan Berg. Like, there is a movement to try to get that street memorialized after him. But apparently he used to do stuff on the radio, like, say, all these women go into tanning salons. I think they want to be black. And then that would just start the calls. It would just be trolling stuff like that. Or he would say things about Jesus or whatever and just start, you know, he would just find a topic and then just go crazy.
But what was it, In the movie Talk Radio, though, he was killed by Rocket's Red Glare.
Right.
Famous heroin addict, right?
Yeah.
Do you listen to the Free Speech podcast?
No.
There was, like, this long diet thing. They were talking about Rocket's Red Glare and how he's a massive junkie on that podcast. And I was like, really? The guy who shot Eric Bogosian in Talk Radio? Like, I only can think of, like, two movies he's in, but I was like, what a strange reference. they just went on this tangent about Rocket's Red Glare. Anyway, sorry, I just...
Yeah, Berg was killed by some white supremacist militia guy who was, I think, based out of... He was on the run, like, between Wyoming and... I don't know, it's a whole strange story, because I'm thinking about, wow, this is where I live now, and all this crazy shit was going on. You know, 30 years ago, but yeah, it was some militia crazy dude who I think was already on the run and wanted and went and killed Alan Berg.
That's nuts.
Yeah,
it's like man, because I can't think of, you know, they always say, like, the whole thing with free speech now is whenever somebody has something happen to them for free speech, if you bring it up and say, well, what about free speech? If the person doesn't like what that person says, they'll go, well, they're all, you know, that's to protect you from the government, but you're not protected from the repercussions of what happens with free speech. But I can't think of, like, I was like Alan Berg, but I can't think of a lot of radio talk show hosts who are killed for being inflammatory.
As far as I know, Alan Berg's the only one.
Yeah, he's the only one that comes to mind.
And most of them today, all these smarmy guys who say the type of stuff like you were quoting, probably couldn't even name him.
No, I doubt it.
But we can.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, because...
Well, we're all about information and backstory and history and context.
And you know who the real godfather of this all is, John?
Who's that?
Father Coughlin. Father Coughlin.
Oh,
God. Yeah, that was the guy who... Like...
The Catholic Father Coughlin.
Who basically started social justice as a big phrase among the population.
Yeah, yeah.
Always talking about social justice, so there's their big hero.
That was was he a Jesuit?
I don't think he was a Jesuit.
Because Jesuits were the ones who were big into the social justice thing.
He may have been educated by the Jesuits. I don't believe he was a Jesuit. I'd have to look at his...
There's a reason... A lot of Catholics don't like Jesuits for that reason.
Right.
Like, a lot of people were really worried when Pope Francis became Pope because he's a Jesuit.
Right. And they had every reason to be because he sounds like a loon.
Oh. I remember... that was funny. I remember looking into the Dropbox and seeing this folder called Father Coughlin. I'm like, what is this? I played it paid by him. What the fuck is this shit? It's ridiculous.
I listened to every sermon that I had on file, and I was like, wow. You know, the
you're
history
an atheist as well.
Yeah, and I listened to every sermon. I was fascinated by the history, because I've always been interested in the idea that in the 1940s, 1930s, in America, it was actually very unpopular to be for going to war against Germany.
Yeah, it was isolationism all the way.
Right. It's like, it's an interesting idea to me. I'm glad we did go to war and things that ended the way we did, and we stopped, you know, helped stop Germany. But it's fascinating to me that you know, we always act like, yes, America tightened up its pants and bootstraps and then went to war, you know, with, like, patriotically. It was like, no, they were actually mostly against going to war.
In fact, we looked at Europe back then the same way we look at the Middle East today. They're always fucking killing each other. Like, let's just let them kill each other. Why is it our business, you know?
Exactly.
It's the same argument.
Like, after Pearl Harbor, everybody was for going to war against Japan, but they were not. Still, they were like, why do we care about Europe? Who cares?
Yeah, no, yeah. I mean, Japan attacked us. You know, people were like, but Europe, they're always killing each other. Look at World War One.
Right, and you can watch those old newsreels where they're like, I think that Germany is Europe's problem. Mm-hmm. You know, Hitler is Europe's problem.
And there were even people who liked Hitler. They were like, oh, you know, it looks like he really brought Germany out of an economic, you know, out of just a total, like, economic depression.
Lindbergh.
Yeah.
JFK's dad.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, there's a lot of them.
Yeah. What was it? You know, the King's Speech? The brother, the guy who left the crown to go have an affair with that chick.
Never saw it.
Well, there's the King's Speech, but Madonna directed this terrible movie about the guy who left his wife to go be with this woman, and he forfeited the crown, and it went to the Colin Firth character in the King's Speech. Mm-hmm. But this guy, who is that character's brother, Madonna did a movie about them called W.E., but he was a big Nazi sympathizer, too. And he was, and it's a common theme, the royal family, like, loving terrible ideologies.
Mm-hmm.
Prince Charles with some of his things about how...
Yeah, but Father Coughlin was always complaining about the bankers and the Jews.
Of course.
It sounds a lot like the Alex Jones nonsense I hear today.
No, it's the Jews in my sandwich.
And it sounds like the stuff I hear from the crazy Ron Paul bots.
Oh. Well, it's so funny how... when you look back then, it was like anytime there was an economic depression, it was like, well, the Jews are at it again. They're taking all of our money.
And then the Coughlin sermons were like a reminder of that. Like, I want to hear the real history. And it's funny that he was smart about manipulating controversy as well, because there'd be an announcer at the end of the sermon going, your local station, there are many people who are trying to remove Father Coughlin from the airwaves. Do you feel this way? You should write to your local station. Tell them to keep Father Coughlin's radio program on the air. We'll hear from you, you know, or we may not be on next week. There'd be all these threats, like he was really selling controversy, and I mean, I'm sure it was warranted, because man, you listen to this stuff, it's like, Jesus, this Christ, this was on the radio back then. It's
yeah,
like, good Lord, you know, going, Mr. Hitler, I mean, it was just like crazy stuff to listen to.
And now a word about blue charcoal.
Blue charcoal.
Luco.
It's definitely not The Shadow or Lights Out or anything like that. It's it was different, very different listen.
Yeah.
I actually, speaking of The Shadow, I found an LP set of Orson Welles' Shadow episodes that was unopened.
Yeah.
Really? Yeah, it was still sealed.
I got it, but mine was used when I bought mine.
Oh, it was. I found it at Half Price Books for like $5, and it was an LP set of Shadow narrated by Orson Welles, and it still had the like old shrink wrapping on it.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
That is very cool.
Yeah.
I wish I could find some cool stuff like that. I have like every existing episode on hard drive, but I'm like, just to find old vinyl like that, it's always cool.
Yeah, I found it like a week ago. I need to just sit down with, you know, a glass of wine and listen to The Shadow, like sit around the radio.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Those things you can find like a you know, thrift stores and, you know, fucking Salvation Armies and Red Cross centers. Nobody wants them. Like, nobody wants them. Except us, but nobody else really wants them. You know, they just, the junk, you know, yard sales, you'll find all that shit there easily.
Oh, the crazy library sales.
Oh,
like, when they do, like, the county library sales, the ones we have here are amazing.
Yeah, nobody goes to them. Yeah.
Yeah. They're incredible. Like, I'll go there and go through the vinyl. I will take the day off from work so I could be first in the door at 9 a.m. to head over to the vinyl section. I'll find all sorts of crazy stuff.
Wow.
And I've found plenty of rare books and plenty of common books, but I always find very interesting stuff every time I go.
If you find any rare stuff, let me know, will you?
Oh, yeah. It's funny. There's never much rock stuff. There's always Herb Alpert. There's always Andy Williams. But then there will be something unique. Like, I'll find some unique stuff, like Justin Wilson's comedy album, The Cajun Cook from TV. Yeah. Burl Ives America. Four Sides of Patriotism. It's just really weird stuff like that.
Jim,
but it's because people die and they can't liquidate their estates through a liquidator, so they just donate them to the library.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
lots of cool stuff.
Who the hell wants these fucking first pressing Lenny Bruce records, right?
Nobody. Yeah, exactly. That's the situation all the time.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Anyway, what did you guys think of the documentary? You know, what would you sort of?
Well, I really enjoyed it. I mean, I had problems with it, like equating Mort to, you know, Glenn Beck and Sean Hannity and stuff. I just thought that I thought that felt like the perspective of someone who's never seen those shows, because they're not this hour of hate. It's just it's ridiculous. I thought that was really reaching and just untrue. But and you know, the animations were problematic. The one that I really hated was the Catholic schoolgirls bum rushing the limo, and the limo's a giant cock with these girls
that was
off
a
of
bit
it.
Weird.
I
yeah.
hated
yeah.
that, because I mean, the older I get, the more sensitive I am to girls being underage, women being portrayed thusly, you know. And it's just, I saw that and I was like, that's gross, like, why are we doing this, you know?
Animation by R. Kelly.
Yeah, I was just like, you're depicting underage girls like hanging off a giant penis. Like, come on now. Like, let's not do that. But other than that, though, I mean, I thought it was informative. It was cool to see interviews with like Chris Elliott and all the former Mort fans and like all these interesting. Like, wasn't Pat Buchanan in there?
I believe, yeah, he was. Yeah. He was conservative commentator. Although he's kind of an outlier as far as conservatives go.
Well, was it? I heard a crazy story about Pat Buchanan. Like, because I always thought of him as like this stodgy guy. But on the Free Speech podcast, I heard this story, and they were talking about how Pat Buchanan has a bunch of brothers, and one of the brothers is like mentally retarded.
Mm-hmm.
And like Pat Buchanan and his brothers would go to the store, and their retarded brother would walk out in front of them and be like, "Doo doo doo, go into the store," you know. And somebody would be like, "Look at the retard," you know. Like somebody would say something, or "Hey retard," or you know, "What's wrong with this guy?" And Pat Buchanan and his brothers would just go up and be like, "Oh really?" And they would send that guy to the hospital. Like, they would, like...
I believe it.
They would beat the shit out of whoever... Like, you know, they would have their brother out in front, like, seeming like he was walking by himself, and the moment someone insulted him, they would just come down on him and beat the shit out of him. I thought that was amazing. It sounds so, like... Because isn't he from, like, New Jersey or something?
I believe so. He was like, friends with Hunter S. Thompson. He's a...
There you go.
Yeah, I mean, Hunter S. Thompson even mentioned him in his books, and it's Pat Buchanan was an interesting guy.
Oh, like, Pat Buchanan,
retard
brother. You know, beat him up.
It was very
Jersey.
It was very very tough.
Very
tough. Listen to Father Coughlin when he was young.
Yeah, very tough. Very tough individual.
Right, and
was he a conservative at all?
Who?
Hunter S. Thompson.
No.
No, he was a pretty liberal dude. But
okay.
But, because he wrote for, like, Rolling Stone.
Yeah.
But my thing with Hunter S. Thompson, he's a very entertaining writer, but he's also what I think people who go to journalism school want to be.
Right.
And Hunter S. Thompson was not he did do the Hell's Angels thing, but, like, a lot of his stuff was not journalism. It was him getting high and writing about, like, being on assignment but it was more about his experience in the American Dream and Nixon and blue.
Yeah, it's not journalism. It's actually pretty bad.
They call it gonzo journalism, but it's
gonzo
really
journalism.
Just,
you make yourself the subject of the report.
Yeah, it's narcissism. It's not.
Yeah, everybody wants to do that, but it's like his stuff is like, I think probably gave us a generation of really awful journalists.
Yeah, no, it really did. Thompson could get away with it because he was a talented writer. And he had a very unique voice. But the problem is people like that, they breed a legion of terrible wannabes.
Yeah, horrible writers. And they forget that Thompson's big inspiration was like William Faulkner. He was not inspired by journalists, and maybe Hemingway. It's like, and all of these reporters are inspired by him, so you're just getting, you know, it's like a punk band inspired by Green Day. It's gonna be good Charlotte, you know.
Exactly. That's we got those.
Yeah, exactly. Or a ska band inspired by No Doubt. I mean, just how bad could it, or a metal band inspired by Bon Jovi. I mean, just how bad could it be?
Just all the byproducts. But yeah, that's the way music goes, man. You know?
Right, right. But Pat Buchanan is just one of those kind of oddballs that somehow is represented as a conservative commentator, which he is. But bit of an anomaly as well.
Yeah, totally, so, totally.
He was an odd choice for the Morton Downey thing, and maybe because he was friends with him, I don't know.
Yeah, well, he seems like the kind of person that would be on that show. I never saw him.
I mean, he writes for Talkie Mag.
Yeah, he does.
He writes for like Talkie Mag, and you know, I think he has some syndication, but he's not as big as he used to be. Now that Crossfire is gone, he was on Crossfire in the 80s.
By the way, they were. I was seeing the infamous Jon Stewart appearance on Crossfire popping up everywhere the past week or so.
Oh, really?
Because it was like, you know, the anniversary. It was like the 10th anniversary or something of Jon. Yeah, it was 10th anniversary. So I think it was in 2005. So I was in college when that happened. And I remember all of my friends like were high off of that. They thought it was the greatest thing they'd ever seen. And so I remembered that and I went and watched the clip.
Mm-hmm.
I can't believe anybody thought. I mean, I can, but I can't believe people think that what Stewart did there was good television. He's just being a sarcastic dick. Like he's just like, no, you guys are hurting America. The show is what's the word? Bad. You know, like he came on there and he. And when he was asked to comment on it, he said, oh, you know, it was, I just thought we'd have a laugh about how bad the show is. And, you know, but my low blood sugar and being tired equals no bueno. But you could tell he just went on that show just ready to drop some bombs, man. You know, just watching, I was like, this is so lame. Like, people thought
this was overrated TV personality of the last 25 years. Easy.
Did anybody see the trailers for Rosewater?
No.
It looks like what we were talking about earlier, like everybody's idealization of the crusading journalist. And it was just like, who would want to watch this? This looks like
did anybody even see it?
I don't think so.
I think it is
like, I don't even think Jon Stewart fans saw it cuz it's not what they
it wasn't
like.
A, it wasn't a 45 second YouTube clip.
No, and it's not
been smashing and destroying whatever the hell they
Oh, it's like does. everything I see and like, you know, like with Jon Stewart, with Stephen Colbert, and with John Oliver especially, you see, they destroy, blah, blah, blah.
No.
They smash, da-da-da. And, you know, and actually, John Oliver, I like some of his segments. I'm not on the same page as him politically, but, like, his thing on tobacco was great, and it just made me so happy that I don't smoke anymore.
Well, here's the truth to their little headline fantasies. Morton Downey Jr. did actually destroy and smash things on his show.
Yeah, but he didn't physically.
What these pussies do on Comedy Central is not the same thing.
Right. No, it's
absolutely not. You cannot use verbs like destroy.
It's them talking by themselves and like, you know, that was one thing was that Tucker Carlson in that appearance by Jon Stewart, he brought out some questions that Stewart had recently given to John Kerry.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like he was saying, like he was accusing Stewart of softballing an interview, like and just building up, which he totally did. Like it was, you know, you're a handsome man. People say bad things about you. How does that feel? You know,
yeah.
It was stuff like that, and you know, Tucker Carlson, you know, tried to take him to task on it, especially because Jon Stewart opened with that smug salvo, and Jon Stewart's like, I'm sorry, how are you holding up feels like is a softball question. But let me ask you something, you know?
Yeah, and it's because they fed Kerry those softball questions exactly why he lost in 2006.
Oh, yeah.
Or 2004.
2004, yes.
2006 was the big annihilation of where the Democrats had the big
rise. I was in college at the time, and I gotta tell you, like, I'm not a big fan of George Bush, but the tears of all the liberal arts college kids.
Yeah, it's when, like, I didn't Kerry like George Bush, but I enjoyed watching John Kerry lose.
Oh, it was you know, amazing. It was just those tears.
Yeah.
Fed me energy. Like,
just
I
seeing
could...
John Bon Jovi coming out to Government Square in Boston and singing "Wanted Dead or Alive" in the acoustic version is the funniest fucking thing. And I turned it on to Air America, and I heard Al Franken read the reports from Ohio and go, ah, this is not good. And they were all, like, ready to shoot themselves.
Yeah. No, it was just, I was, because, I mean, let's face it, kids, whatever, you know, that election would not have made a massive difference either way, as we've seen with Barack Obama. But,
absolutely.
God, it was amazing. I'm sure... I hope none of my friends are listening to this and thinking I'm an asshole, but it's okay. You know, whatever.
Oh, I laugh my ass off.
I don't need to listen to that to know that.
Yeah, that's true. They already know. They already know. If they listen to the show regularly, they know.
Let's wind it up. What score are you giving it, Hannah?
I give it about a 7.
All right. John.
I'd give it about a 6.5.
I only give it about a 7.5 because for the fact that it gave me enough information that I needed to know about Morton Downey Jr., someone who was pretty much unfamiliar with him. The one person I wish they had gotten on documentary, if she's still alive, is his last wife, Laurie. But
that's not on there. Yeah.
It
would have been good to get her side of it, but
she could have confirmed as to whether or not Morton turned into a minotaur when he got mad, like the animation suggested.
God,
yeah,
the hell.
The documentary didn't say at the end, you know, Laurie Downey was offered to be interviewed but declined. It was none of that there, so I thought, I'm sure she would have been considered, you know, for the for her side of the story, but no, it was none of that there. It did seem to me a bit one-sided towards the start. Like, for a good chunk of it was a one-sided towards, like, pro-Morton Downey Jr., but then it did, you know, shift the other side. And,
well, I think there was, like, a love of the of Mort's attitude in the documentary, but I think there was also, like, a sort of disdain for some of his views. Like, because, like, I don't think anybody who... likes Morton Downey Jr. would compare him to... I mean, like, who agrees with what his views were would compare him to Glenn Beck and Sean Hannity and all these people. So I think that there was a love of the attitude and sort of the spunk of the show, but I don't think the viewers are on with par are on the same page as him. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
Gotcha. Yeah. Well, it's also because media has changed so much. They don't even that's a hard thing to get across in a documentary.
It really is. But I mean, what I liked about it was, I mean, I thought it pretty well entertainingly told the story of Morton Downey Jr. It picked a lot of really good clips. You know, it had a lot of good interviews, and you know, I enjoyed that. Even though I had a few problems with it, but overall, like, I'd recommend it if you're unfamiliar with Morton Downey Jr. Or if you want to reminisce about the good old days, you know, about that, you know, that 6 months or whatever where he was popular.
the good old days of watching that instead of Carson. Or late with Rick Dees or whatever the hell the thing was on ABC after Nightline.
Yeah. But yeah, so any other thoughts, fellas?
No, I'd say definitely check it out.
Yeah.
Awesome, yeah. No,
it's on Netflix.
It's on Netflix,
mean,
so
on.
It's really not much of a of time of an investment, money or time-wise, really.
Nah, I mean, run it in the background.
I honestly, like, I just went on Netflix and was just... I wanted something to watch for just a little bit. I'd start it and pick it up if it was interesting. And because I was going to go to bed soon, and I picked that, and I started watching it, and I just ended up watching the whole thing, you know. And I think that, so I think that's a pretty good recommendation right there.
Yeah, I mean, it's highly watched.
It's only It's only 90 minutes. It's not like you're going to be invested for 2.5 hours or nothing like that. It's a solid 90 minutes.
And it's good enough that it's good enough and paced well enough that it just flies by.
Yeah, it does. It didn't feel like, oh shit, this thing just taking forever. It was nothing like that. You know, it was more. It was actually a better documentary than what the one with G. Gordon Liddy and Timothy Leary was. I mean, I enjoyed that, even though it was a different sort of style.
Well, that one's an older school. This documentary's a little more modern in terms of...
This is the new wave of documentaries with cartoon segments.
Yeah.
Of the subject turning into minotaurs and, you know...
and cigarette teeth.
Yeah, cigarette teeth and demon eyes. So it's you know,
his dad shaking his head disapprovingly.
Like, what the hell? And the thing is, there's so many crazy things you can pull out of the show that instead of doing those cartoons, that would have probably gotten the point across. But you know, I don't know how much footage they had access to, and you know how freeform it was. So you know, I would also recommend watching some of the old shows on YouTube. Like, after you watch a documentary, go watch some of the episodes on YouTube. There's some full episodes up there, and you'll get an idea of what it was like.
Surprise, we never got, like, a videotape or a DVD of the best of Morton Downey Jr., because they've done it with Springer for numerous times.
Well, because his rise and fall was so quick, and it was before the home video release everything you can possibly release thing was around. You know, he was big when it was still a rental market. There was no sell-through.
Oh yeah, I'm sure. I'm talking about even retrospectively. Like, there's been nothing out there, that, to my knowledge, anyway.
No demand. There's just no demand. There was one of the old station staffers or production guys on the show was selling tapes on eBay at one point, and that's some underground popularity of him. Like he was selling like tapes or DVDs on eBay of the station copies, and then I think he got a cease and desist. He couldn't do it anymore.
Cease and desist from the deceased. All right. Before we go, I want to plug a couple of podcasts out there.
Right on.
One is a new one with our friends Leslie and Bill. Called The Right Angle. It is now. It is a live show. It is Tuesday 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And you can get the replay of it, I think, the next day via, I hope I got it right, K98 Talk on SoundCloud. You'll be able to get it from there. But go check it out. They just did episode one, and it was very, very good. It runs an hour, and it's very funny, as you'd imagine. Those two on there, so it's definitely one to check out. Another one is called They Must Be Destroyed on Sight. I believe it is, with a guy named Lee Russell on there, who has been supporting us quite a bit. And Lee, I hope I got your podcast shown right, mate. I haven't got it in front of me at the moment. They're a YouTube one, and they are available on Podbean as well to listen to. And I'll throw a couple of links up there for them.
Excellent.
And that's the one. Yeah. Oh, and Lee, your request for Street Fighter is coming.
Oh,
all
boy.
Right, we will be getting to that.
Oh, boy.
Well, yeah.
Oh, boy. Looking forward to that.
Mm.
Good old Sonny Chiba.
Yeah, that's all right. But,
I hope he didn't mean the Van Damme movie. You didn't mean the Van Damme movie, right? Okay.
We would do the old trick of, okay, we don't really want to do that, so we're going to do the Chiba film. That's like on a previous pod, on my old podcast, we had a request for Heat, the Michael Mann movie.
And I remember that, you did Heat.
And we said, nah, we're going to do the Burt Reynolds Heat, because we don't care to watch the Michael Mann movie, so we did that.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
I gotta plug some friends.
Okay. Who, sweet.
Cool.
Yeah, the Cine Sludge podcast. Our friends Davey Z and Dan T doing they talk about stuff we don't talk about, like Lucio Fulci, Jim Wynorski, Fred Olen Ray, Very fanatically.
So blood and titties, basically, is what you're saying.
Exactly. Very enthusiastic discussions of those directors. Been real Jim Wynorski focus, I notice, in a lot of episodes. But it's growing. They only started like a few months ago, and they're up to about 10 episodes. And, you know, they're plugging away. So I would go for, if you like those type of films, get into the Cine Sludge thing. We're not going to talk about them here. So
I'll check that out.
We may do a 10-part episode on the amazing Julie Strain one day. She's hot.
I wonder if I'm related to her. My mom's maiden name is Strain.
Uh-oh. Mm. Is she from Concord, California?
Oh,
no,
really?
Actually. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. And John?
That's it.
And that's it for me. So any other business, fellas? I guess that's a no.
Any
other business, I mean?
Business? I ain't got no bit.
No business. All right. Well, in that case, we'll see you guys next time. And adios.
And mahalo.
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast. To leave feedback and show suggestions, email us at midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like our Midnight Movie Cowboys show page on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and feel free to leave us a review. Listen to us on Stitcher.com or the Stitcher Radio app. Want to help the show out? Visit MidnightMovieCowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate link. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Our personal links are on the right side of our homepage. See y'all next time.
TV.